welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thank you for joining us. In today's lecture, we'll review the vertical structure of the atmosphere, talk about temperature and the different temperature scales, and talk about the different ways to transfer energy, including radiation, convection, and conduction. We'll also introduce the electromagnetic spectrum and the three laws of radiation. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through the first part of Chapter 2 from the Aaron's text. First, I'd like to go through a little review about the thermal structure of the atmosphere. Remember from last class we identified four layers: the troposphere, stratosphere, mesosphere, and thermosphere. The troposphere is the lowest level between the surface and about 12 kilometers. This layer is warmed by the Earth and temperature decreases with increasing altitude. The average surface temperature is about 20 degrees Celsius and cools to a chilly negative 60 degrees Celsius at the top of the troposphere, called the tropopause. The stratosphere is the next highest layer, directly above the troposphere. In this layer, temperature increases with height due to the presence of ozone. It ranges from approximately 12 kilometers to 50 kilometers, with temperatures starting at negative 60 degrees Celsius and warming to about 0 degrees Celsius at the top when we reach the stratopause. The mesosphere is the layer that is directly on top of the stratosphere. Temperature decreases with height within this layer. It ranges from about 50 kilometers to about 85 kilometers. Temperature decreases from 0 degrees Celsius to approximately negative 90 degrees Celsius at the top when we reach the mesopause. This layer is where we find the coldest temperatures in the Earth's atmosphere. This layer cools with height because it is not warmed by the Earth or ozone. The top layer of the atmosphere is known as the thermosphere. This layer ranges from 85 kilometers and above, with no well-defined upper limit. Temperatures in this layer increase with altitude, and we find the highest temperatures in this layer. These very high temperatures are due to the sun warming the N2 and O2 molecules. This heats up what's called rarefied air, which is very, very thin. Temperatures are high due to the interactions of the energized molecules bumping into one another. That finishes up our quick review of the thermal structure of the atmosphere. Now let's move on to another layer of the atmosphere that is not defined by temperature, the ionosphere. The ionosphere is located between 60 kilometers and 400 kilometers. Thus, it overlaps with the uppermost part of the mesosphere and the thermosphere. It is an electrically charged layer that has no influence on daily weather. Remember, ions are atoms and molecules that have lost or gained one or more electrons. Atoms lose electrons and become positively charged when they cannot absorb all of the energy transferred to them by a colliding energy particle or the sun's energy. It is the site of the aurora, which will be discussed momentarily. Even though the ionosphere is not important for daily weather, it is important for long-wave radio transmission. Radio transmissions travel in straight lines and bounce off the ionosphere. During the day, there are several layers to the ionosphere, F, E, and D, with F being the uppermost and D being the lowermost layer. The D layer strongly absorbs and weakens AM radio waves, preventing them from being picked up by distant receivers. At night, there are fewer layers in the ionosphere, making them seem thinner, essentially with only the uppermost F layer being present. This higher region strongly reflects AM radio waves, allowing them to be sent over greater distances. Besides AM radio waves, the ionosphere is well known for the aurora. There are the aurora borealis, which are known as the northern lights in the northern hemisphere, and the aurora australis, known as the southern lights in the southern hemisphere. Aurora are closely correlated with solar flare activity. If you want to view aurora, geographic location is important. We find them over the Earth's magnetic poles, or the north and south poles. They appear in the night sky as overlapping curtains of color. The bottom of these curtains usually start around 100 kilometers or 62 miles above the surface, with tops at about 400 kilometers, or 248 miles. The colors vary from pinks to reds to greens. In this class, we're going to start talking about what constitutes weather and climate. Remember that weather is the state of the atmosphere at any given time, and climate is a description of aggregate weather conditions. My favorite phrase is climate is what you expect, but weather is what you get. Weather is the condition of the atmosphere at any particular time and includes variables such as air temperature, air pressure, humidity, cloud cover, precipitation, amount and type, visibility, and wind speed and direction. Climate is the average range of weather elements. as described previously, over a long period of time. This essentially covers how hot, cold, wet, and dry a region is. This includes the extreme weather events, including droughts, heat waves, and cold snaps. So we need to have a well-defined idea of what a climate should be like in order to determine if some place is experiencing drier than average, which would be our climate, or hotter than average, or colder than average. We need to know what that average is. When we talk about climate changes, we're talking on geological timescales, such as ice ages versus non-ice ages. We need to think about climate on much longer timescales than we do daily weather. For weather and climate, temperature is one of the most important weather elements. We need to have a firm and clear understanding of what we mean by temperature. Temperature is a measure of kinetic energy. This is the energy within a body that is a result of motion. Temperature of the air, for example, is a measure of its average kinetic energy and describes how warm or cold an object is. So the faster a molecule is moving, the warmer it will be. The transfer of energy into or out of an object because of temperature differences is called heat. Heat is the flow of energy. After heat is transferred, it is stored as internal energy in the molecules of that particular object. This internal energy can be measured by thermometers using three different temperature scales: Fahrenheit, Celsius, and Kelvin. The Fahrenheit scale was developed in the 1700s by a physicist named Fahrenheit. It's based on fixed points he measured in his lab. He measured the coldest temperature he could and called this zero. On this scale, freezing of regular water was 32 and boiling was 212. He also marked off human body temperature. There are 180 divisions between freezing and boiling on the Fahrenheit scale. This is the temperature scale we use in the US. The Celsius scale was introduced in the 1800s using a decimal scale. This means it uses powers of 10. On this scale, 0 is freezing and 100 is boiling, so that there are 100 divisions between freezing and boiling. Other countries use this scale as well as scientists. The Kelvin scale is named after Lord Kelvin, a British scientist. There are no negative numbers on the Kelvin scale and makes it even more convenient for scientific calculations than the Celsius scale. It has the same spacing as the Celsius scale with 100 divisions between boiling and freezing. It's called the absolute scale since 0 degrees Kelvin is the temperature at which all molecular motion is presumed to cease. At absolute zero, molecules stop moving and there is no thermal motion. On the Kelvin scale, freezing is 273.15 Kelvin and boiling is 373.15 Kelvin. Now that we have an understanding of temperature and heat, we can start to talk about how this relates to weather phenomena and water in the atmosphere. One of the most interesting and important terms you'll learn in this class is latent heat. This is the heat energy required to change a substance from one form to another, for example, changing water from solid to liquid. During this change of phase, the temperature stays constant. The heat is used to melt the ice and does not produce a temperature change. That's why latent heat is usually described as hidden heat. To understand latent heat better, we can look at the three phases of water and how energy changes as we go from one form to another. We have solid, liquid, and gas. Heat is absorbed from the environment when we go from solid to liquid. This is called melting. Heat is also absorbed when we go from liquid to gas. This is called evaporation. Since we take heat from the environment to cause these changes to happen, we can say that these processes cool the environment. If we go from solid to a gas, this is called sublimation. If we think about things the other way, we're talking about heat being released into the environment. When gas changes to a liquid, this is called condensation. When we think of liquid turning solid, we call this freezing. And finally, when a gas goes straight to a solid, we call this deposition. All of these release energy to the environment and can be considered warming processes. Know your phase changes and when heat is absorbed or released. Heat can be transferred in different ways, and today we're going to talk about three different mechanisms of heat transfer. First, we have conduction. This is the transfer of heat through molecular collisions from one molecule to another. The ability to conduct varies. Metals are better conductors than air. An example is holding a metal rod that has been inserted into the flame of a Bunsen burner. Over time, the molecule-to-molecule interactions result in heat transfer from the flame to your fingers and hand. Ultimately, you'll drop the metal rod because it will become too hot to hold. Air isn't a good conductor. This is why we use fluffy air-filled insulation in our homes to keep the heat transfer in or out of our home to a minimum. That way, we can keep our homes warm in the winter and cool in the summer. As far as the atmosphere is concerned, the thing to remember is that it's only important for the air in direct contact with the surface of the Earth. Those are the only molecules in contact with the surface of the Earth that can experience conduction. Next, we have convection. During convection, heat transfer occurs through the actual movement or circulation of a substance. For us, we'll be talking mostly about air, but it applies to liquids as well. In this case, air is a fluid. Convection is the most common form of heat transfer in the atmosphere. A good example to think of is a pot of water placed on top of a Bunsen burner. The water closest to the flame will heat up first. This water will become less dense for reasons we'll discuss in detail a little later in the semester. Because it is less dense, it will rise and flow to the top. But because the water is then farther away from the heat source, it cools, becoming more dense, and sinks back down to the bottom of the pot to begin the cycle anew. This is called a convection current. Our pot and burner example is a good analog for what actually happens to air in the atmosphere. If there is a spot on the surface of the Earth that is warmer than the surrounding area, it can cause the air to warm, which would make it less dense and cause it to rise. If it rises enough, a cloud might form. However, if the air goes too far from the surface, it can cool enough to cause it to sink back down. Remember, air temperature in the troposphere decreases with increasing altitude. We call these rising blobs of air thermals. One note for you and a new vocabulary term is advection. This term means the horizontal movement of air. I mention it now so that you learn the difference between convection, which is the vertical motion of air, and advection, which is the side-to-side or horizontal movement of air. They sound similar, so it's up to you to work on memorizing the differences. Finally, we have radiation. Radiation is the process by which energy travels through the vacuum of space. There are no molecules to bump into each other, as in the case with conduction, and there is no air or fluid between the Earth and the Sun for convection to work. Radiation is how all solar energy reaches the Earth. We call solar radiation the electromagnetic spectrum, or electromagnetic radiation, and there are a variety of subtypes we can describe. While electromagnetic radiation is a continuum of different wavelengths of energy, we've created boundaries to help us describe the different types and how we interact with them. First, you need to know that shortwave radiation, or radiation with short wavelengths measured from crest to crest, have more energy than long-wave radiation types, which have long distances between crests. In the middle of the spectrum, we have visible light, which ranges from 400 nanometers, which is in the violet color range, to 700 nanometers, which is in the red range. If we talk about long wavelengths, we're talking about radiation on the red side of the spectrum. After we leave the visible range, we have infrared radiation, microwave radiation, radio waves, radar, TV, FM, and AM radio waves. These do not typically cause cellular damage. If we think about shortwave radiation, we're in the violet side of the spectrum, starting with ultraviolet radiation, X-rays, and gamma rays. UV, or ultraviolet, X-rays, and gamma rays all have negative health effects. For example, too much UV radiation, you can develop sunburns and skin cancer. Regardless of the type of radiation, they all travel at 300,000 kilometers per second, or 186,000 miles per second, which is the speed of light. If we talk about the radiation emitted by the Earth, we realize that we're not a hot glowing mass of gas, so we're not as hot or energetic as the Sun. The Earth emits radiation at longer wavelengths than the Sun. The Earth emits primarily in the long wave and emits considerably less radiant energy than the Sun. In fact, over 95% of the Earth's radiation has wavelengths between 2.5 and 30 micrometers, which falls neatly in the infrared range. Most of our emission occurs at 10 micrometers. To finish up today's lecture, I wanted to leave you with the three laws of radiation. These laws help bring together all the ideas we've talked about today. First, all objects continually emit radiant energy over a range of wavelengths. This means that the Sun, the Earth, you, even a burner on your stove, are continually emitting radiant energy. This is why night vision goggles, which allow you to see infrared radiation, work for seeing humans at night. We emit in the long wave, but much more than our surroundings, like plants or buildings. Everything emits energy unless it is at absolute zero, where molecules stop moving. The second law states that hotter objects radiate more energy in the form of short wavelength radiation than cooler objects. For example, a hot burner on a stove glows red when it's on the highest setting. A cooler burner, say on the lowest setting, doesn't glow at all, but will still feel hot to the touch. That's infrared radiation. The third and final law states that hotter objects radiate more total energy per unit area than do cooler objects. This relationship is explained by the Stefan-Boltzmann law that relates temperature to energy output. In this relationship, you take temperature and take it to the fourth power. Not squared, not cubed, but temperature to the fourth power. Once you have this value, you would multiply it by the Stefan-Boltzmann constant to get the amount of energy emitted by an object. For example, the sun is about 6,000 Kelvin or 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit, while the Earth is only 289 Kelvin or 59 degrees Fahrenheit. If we use the Stefan-Boltzmann law, you'd see that the sun is 160,000 times more energetic than the Earth. This makes intuitive sense since we get our energy from the sun and not vice versa. You won't need to memorize this equation or do any calculations, but it's illustrative to see how important an object's temperature is for determining the type and amount of radiation that can be emitted. That finishes up our lecture on temperature, heat, methods of heat transfer, and the electromagnetic spectrum. For our next class, be ready to review the three laws of radiation and learn about heating the Earth's atmosphere, the energy balance of the Earth, why we have seasons, and the role that clouds and other factors play in determining surface temperature. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!